people become very expert at what they do. If people knew how expert a psychiatrist is after 50 years of listening to them, they'd shake their bones. By the time they make the appointment, I already know the diagnosis, I know what's wrong with them, I can tell you what the whole story is. I was here. In fact, I can tell them what to do to cure it and save them the trip. I used to do it all the time. I had a huge practice, you know, the biggest in the United States. I listened to the story and I said, look, quit eating sugar and sweets, take about 3 grams a day of vitamin C, and 50 milligrams a day of B6. If you don't feel better in a month, call me. You know, functional hypoglycemia is so obvious. You know, I get the shakes and I get in the rages and functional hypoglycemia. You know, I mean, it's just so, you just know it from the tone of voice. Okay. All right. Those who are out for spiritual seduction are equally clever at the lower levels. But once you get much higher, the seduction becomes more subtle. I've written about it in the book, I. The seduction is of the satanic and the seduction is of the luciferic. And I've told you about the seduction of the luciferic in the form of power. Then there is that which distorts truth, and this is the hardest for the real spiritual student, committed spiritual student, where the teacher has a grain of truth in it, and because of the grain of truth, you fall for it, but what you don't get is that the context is out. It's literally plausible, but the context is out. So, other than fame, money, and all the rest that seduce gurus and spiritually evolved people, sexuality is another seduction. The satanic takes the form of also sexual seduction. And of course, there's quite a bit about that in the internet right now. And the way the seduction comes about is all is holy, sex is holy, sex is holy, so let's have holy sex around the clock, you and I. The leader will tell you that. For the good of your soul, the evolution of your spirit. So sexual seduction then falls into the realm. There is a grain of truth, all is holy. Yes, sexuality is holy, of course it is. There is the fallacy of the spiritual and the secular are one and the same. I've had all these presented to me, so I can tell you. The spiritual and the secular are one and the same. From a certain degree of abstraction, that is so. But the intent was to okay going after people for their money, let's say, and signing them up for courses and all. And I said, but these are not aligned with God. They're not aligned with spiritual evolution. They're just, frankly, these courses were to make money. In fact, the course was how to make money. And they made money by teaching you a course on how to make money. So it was funny. I said, but that's not spiritual. So the retort to justify the materialism here was the secular and the spiritual are one and the same. Which from a very abstract view, from that position is correct, but not from this position. So the error was one of context. The intention was how to get people's money, frankly, and sign them up. Therefore, the kinesiologic test is a way we have of affirming what we may suspect. And I'll tell you, gentlemen, very often the wife gets it before you do. I think guru so-and-so is working you for your money, honey. Oh, honey, how can you think that? He's pure and holy. I don't know, just something in me just tells me that. Something in me just tells me that. Let's see. All right, I wanted to cover that. All right, so we covered that. We were talking about the limitation of the mind. As spiritual work progresses, one is interested in the quality, the limitations, the structure of the ego in its form as mind. Mind becomes, somebody's blocking our light here. Here we go with the truth again. All right. As we get up here, see, this is the level in which democracy makes sense. You see, I say, it makes sense up here. A civilization that's in the 400s, educated, sophisticated, modern, advanced society, it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to these people down here, and there's no point to kill them to try and to get it, which you can only get when you're in the 400s, you know what I'm saying? But, so reason becomes the great goal. Then reason itself becomes the limitation. And we said how the great geniuses of history characteristically calibrate around 499. It's as though mind takes you as far as it can go, and now it has to move to a different paradigm, and it doesn't know how to move to a different paradigm of reality. So the intellect, reason, logic, mind, which is really, and science, which are what modern society worships. Modern society does not worship God. It worships science, logic, and reason. I mean, you try going like this in a grocery store and see what happens to you. This is not a spiritual society. $4.99 is a great block. All right, it's because the person reaches the limits of content and they try to stretch it as far as they can. And if you look at these conferences on science and consciousness, you'll see they all calibrate around 460, 470, like that. The most advanced one in the group will get up to about 490, 492 or something. And you can just tell they're pushing their mind to cross that threshold. And they figure the harder you push the mind, but you can't do it by pushing mind. Because mind is only capable of knowing about. It cannot know. The mind cannot know. It does not have the capacity. It is not an instrument of knowing. The mind is capable of knowing about. To know is one thing. To know about is another. The limitation of the intellect, then, is it knows about something. That is still being extraneous to the essence of that which you're just trying to describe. The only way to know a thing is to be it. Only a bird knows birdness. You can know about birdness. I got a straight A in ornithology. So I know about birds, but I don't really know birdness. So when you realize that, then you're capable of humility, not as a spiritual pose. Most spiritual humility is a spiritual pose, but it's the end, you know, all humility comes out of understanding the real. When you really understand the limitation of the intellect, then you're humble for that limitation. So the really great scientists of all time, even though they hit 499, all believed in God. Oh, Sir Isaac Newton, all the great scientific geniuses of time all believed in God. So when you realize, so the mature intellect realizes its own limitations. The difficulty with science is it becomes very arrogant, doesn't realize its own limitations. It doesn't realize it's really stupid intrinsically, which is hard to swallow for a scientist. That it's limited. It can only know about, but it cannot take you across the threshold to 500. How do you cross that barrier. So the intellect attracts us to spirituality. If, as we become more sophisticated and educated, we start getting curious. So the reason then is the curiosity factor, and we begin to read about spiritual things and all. And then the frustration sets in, because that which got us through college and got us straight A's in school now is not helping. I read this book and that book, and you know, you've all got spiritual friends, and you yourself have got stacks of books at home, you've read them all. One can only know by being it. So therefore, the true spiritual teacher knows only by identity with that which is spoken. There is no external source. There is no knowing about anything. One knows what birdness is because one is a bird. So as the presence within takes dominion, then the knowingness begins to reveal itself. Knowingness is self-revealing. You remove the blocks, you remove the barricades, you remove the impediments. And then by devotion to the truth, the way is opened and the truth reveals itself. Eventually then, spiritual work goes beyond knowing about. Everybody here knows enough about to get enlightened 100 million times. Everybody's got enough info to go the whole route, no doubt. What is the next step then? Because further studying is not going to do it. Although I will say, spiritual information, which calibrates at a very high level, the information itself is liberating, just to hear it. Takes away a big chunk of the ego's resistance. Eventually, knowing about the truth no longer suffices. At first, it's exciting to read all those books, to go to all the workshops, etc. But eventually, it becomes its own frustration. And that frustration then becomes the driving force that drives you beyond the 400s. It's that disillusionment and dissatisfaction, the frustration that the intellect won't get you there. Jeez, unfair. I remember raging about it. The harder I studied, the more elusive it was. I realized that the mind, which is the only instrument I knew at that time, wouldn't get me there. Oh, wow, what a frustration. What a sense of loss. No, now something else comes up. So we follow content as far as we can go. You see, the ego wants you to think that you survive because of, the ego says to yourself unconsciously that your survival is due to the fact that I'm up and running. And without me, disaster awaits. So you owe your allegiance to the ego. You become enamored of the mind. And we give it great importance. What you reverence is the mind. The unenlightened person thinks the mind is the way to survival and salvation. Then comes the great disillusionment. No, the mind doesn't have the power. The mind only calibrates in the 400s. It's not going to take you over 600 at all. It only goes so far. That streetcar only goes this far, and then you got to transfer it to a bus. Oh. All right, so it's bus time, so the streetcar will take you so far. It's terrific. I'm not putting down streetcars. I love them. But the rest of the trip has to be by bus. Okay, so What are the tools? IQ, intellect, won't help you anymore. I have at home the great books of the Western world, put out by the University of Chicago in the 30s, every great thinker that ever lived, you know. Aristotle and Plato and Euripides, and it goes all the way down to Freud, stops at Freud, so the work stops around 1900 or so. But it calibrates at 475. The greatest thinkers of all of history calibrate at 475. With the exception of Aristotle, who was over 500. So the intellect will only take you so far. For one reason, if you want to follow the intellect to God, then study epistemology. Probably the nearest thing in philosophy to spiritual reality is epistemology, because epistemology takes you right to the door of how do you know. The whole subject of epistemology then takes the intellect as far as it can get to spiritual truth, and then a jump has to be made. The techniques that we then follow are not studying the written word, but taking what we got from the written word and now making it operative within ourselves. So we then come to devotion, respect, the reverence for truth, the reverence for the truth. It's not the teacher that one reveres, but the truth. One reveres the truth. A reverence for the truth. And a devotion then carries you through the work that it takes to go through the pathway of non-duality. The three great yogas, selfless service, heart and mind, are combined into one. Throughout the day, we look for no gain from our work. We do it out of reverence for life, out of reverence for our existence. The pathway of non-duality, which becomes very demanding as it proceeds, and we'll get into that this afternoon, then requires devotion. The capacity, the devotion to the truth. So one becomes devoted not to the teacher, but to the truth. The teacher is only like a lighthouse. The value of the lighthouse is not the lighthouse. The value of the lighthouse is the light going out to sea. We don't worship the lighthouse, you know what I'm saying? It isn't the lighthouse that's going to save you. No, it's being able to see where the light is to guide yourself back to shore. One becomes increasingly motivated to and desiring of the truth until finally it almost becomes an obsession. At first, it's something you do now and then. Then you have runs of it. You do a weekend retreat, etc. Then you do another weekend retreat. In the meantime, you read all the books. You go to all the workshops. And gradually, a sort of a momentum builds within yourself. And then finally, desire to reach the truth becomes overwhelming. It becomes the drivenness. And you will stop at nothing. That's the time to tell your family. That your life is about to change. And they may think you've gone mad. That's routine. And people will walk out on everything. It then becomes like an obsession, a drivenness, a dedication. There was an old movie, Lost Horizon. Yeah. Who is it that plays in that?
With me?
Huh?
Rivaland.
No?
Ronald Coleman.
Ronald Coleman, yes. Well, you remember, I think I mentioned it in Harvard's a source even, you know, that having once experienced that high energy, I think we calibrated Shangri-La. I forget what it was quite high. But anyway, once having experienced it, he tried going back into the world and tried to function. He was supposed to have some job with the British government or something. Tried to be satisfied with that which is less than what he had experienced. But he got caught by the spiritual energy, and now, through all obstacles, at the risk of death, physical death itself, was driven to return to that state of consciousness. There's a number of people here in the room who've had that same inner experience. They've had sometimes after a catastrophe in life, sometimes without it, sometimes near-death experience, whatever it is. There's a number of people in the room, and some I've seen personally, and they experience that incredible state. And now, oh Lord, how could you have deserted me? It is gone. And I want to be back in that state forever. That's the beginning opening of the door. May open. And in the beginning, it often closes again. Rarely does it stay a permanency. Most usually, it reveals itself. One experiences the self in its full. One experiences the oneness with divinity. That which you are, infinitely love, infinite power, beyond all time, is not different than that which you are. Exquisite, unmistakable, always the same in everyone that it happens to. That's why no teacher has an exclusive on the truth. Anybody who's ever experienced the self in its full radiation has had exactly the same experience throughout all of time in all cultures. Anything that varies from that is not the truth. The experience of the presence of God has always been identical in all cultures throughout thousands of years. Not statistically frequent, but unmistakably identical. There can be no other. There is only the one, and there can be no other than the one. Any description that varies from that cannot be the truth, because the truth is always the same. Once in a while, it's comical. Somebody will... I get such funny letters. You know, infer that you are, what, plagiarizing somebody because a sentence sounds like something they read somewhere else. It better sound like something you read somewhere else. Because the experience of the truth is always the same, whether Gandhamudahuda said that 600 BC or what, you know, whether it's in the Vedas or Christianity or Buddhism or whatever. That's all the cultural trappings that go with it. You know? So that which is the absolute truth has no cultural trappings. Let's see, what is your spiritual lineage? Meaning I should trace teachers and teachers back to the year something or other, walking around, usually in the Middle East in some place, or India, or some strange foreign place. Now, the spiritual truth is the presence of God within, in this instant. It has nothing to do with whatever happened in history. Whatever happened in history is totally boring. A curiosity, perhaps, when you first start studying. whether anything or anyone ever experienced it before is totally irrelevant. It's the reality of now. Be like asking a bird, where did you hear that you were a bird? I just am a bird, for God's sake. Any idiot can see that. So. So all doubt is removed by the experience of self as this infinite presence. Anything that is doubtful is coming from the ego that is resisting its own disillusion, and is hoping it can find a conundrum that will puzzle you so it can go on. Gotcha there, Doc. All right. There is nothing to argue about with the truth because it is not arguable. The reason is it takes no form. To argue with something, it has to have form. You see, context has no form, all form. What's arguable about religion is when it is expressed in dogma, ecclesiastic doctrine, then it can be argued with. But if you don't do that, you can't argue with it. You can only express a limitation. But that limitation that that religion expresses is a limitation of its own innate truth and power. All right, so that which is truly spiritual then grants perfect freedom. There is no dogma to be followed. No excommunication is possible. There is no membership that can be revoked. No titles that can be withdrawn. No possessions that can be, you know, see? Spiritual truth then is open and free. There's nothing to join. There's no dues to pay. There's no language to learn. There's no reverence due anybody. There is, however, a common devotion to the truth. What holds a true spiritual group together? Is all of us are profoundly devoted and worship the truth. The presence of God within, which expresses itself. Oh, thee do I adore, O Lord. A profound devotion to the radical truth. So this is the pathway of radical, devotional, non-duality. Actually, that's the pathway of the mystic, isn't it? That is the pathway of the mystic. The truth is found within when all barriers to it are removed. The commonality in this group is devotion to the innate truth of God within, and the recognition and awareness that that reality can be subjectively verified if all the barriers to it are removed. The purpose of the lectures then is how to remove the barriers so that that which is within shines forth of its own. The sun shines forth when the clouds are removed from the sky. The obstructions to truth. So truth is not something one acquires or gets. You don't get enlightened or anything like that. When all barriers are removed, the sun shines forth equally on all. The energy of that truth is what the teacher transmits, not to one's mental bodies, but to one's higher spiritual bodies. It's the vibration of the higher spiritual bodies that get activated by the frequency of that vibration, which comes out of the certainty of the absoluteness of the presence. for which I give thanks, O Lord. Amen. So, what unites a true spiritual group is the absolute commitment to the pursuit of truth, and we support each other in that endeavor. Sometimes it takes the strength and conviction of others who have done it and say, yes, that is the way to go. This becomes very true. As I say, the spiritual work eventually takes you to a point where the power of the spiritual inspiration now forces you. You see, it isn't that you're choosing. It isn't your desiring this of a higher state. It begins to pull you up, you see? It's like the density of the ocean becomes so intense that you, like a cork, are forced up in it. You would like to congratulate yourself that you've chosen to become spiritual. Fact is, the other way around. It's chosen you, brother. I want you. And it begins to pull you, and the closer you get to the magnet, the more powerful the iron filing is attracted, until finally it's undeniable. If you remove enough barriers, you are pulled to it, whether you like it or not. And by transcending identification with the mind, which you do, as each thing arises, one lets it go until finally the mind is silent. You notice that at all times, you think your mind is busy and you can't conquer it and all this. Don't try and conquer the mind. Just don't identify with it. So where do you look? You look to that which is just a priori to mind. At all times, the majority, the biggest part of your mind is silent. Did you ever know that? Your mind is silent all the time. A little bitty part of your mind is busy thinking about this and that. But the major portion of it is still in silent. Not saying anything. You're only paying attention to the noisy part here. At all times, your mind is silent. One way to notice how your mind is silent is that although your intellect is listening to what's being said, there is within you the awareness of the totality of this room and where we are in Sedona and Arizona. There's a silent part of you that just accepts that the sky is here without thinking, sky. Space is here, silence is here. But the ego wants you to focus on it so it can survive. As you withdraw your energy back from being entranced and enamored of the mind and its goings on, you become there is at all times. The majority of your mind is silent. Even the thinkingness, which is going on here, does not interfere with the silence, because you cannot interfere with the silence. If you're out in the woods, the woods are silent. A bird makes a song. Did the bird destroy the silence? No, the silence is still there. The bird's sound is superimposed against the background of the silence, or else you couldn't hear the bird. But it is the silence, so the silence is immune to interruption, just as the silent area of your mind is always silent. What is your mind doing when it's not thinking? It's being silent. People panic. Jesus. My mom and suddenly went dead. I didn't think of anything. Doctor, yeah, do you think I'm well? Am I getting Alzheimer's? No, the silence is the presence within on the level of consciousness And out of your consciousness comes the awareness which is witnessing and registering the thinkingness. But it's all coming out of a silence. This silence prevails right before the thought arises. You see, the mind thinks in linear terms. So it thinks in the sentence, the dog is chasing the cat up the tree, that this is a linear sequence of thoughts. The dog is chasing the cat up the tree. He sees a causal sequence. Actually, if you study your mind through introspective meditation, you will see that the thoughts arise this way. The, out of nothingness, the dog is chasing the cat up the tree. Every single thought arises from nothingness. Every single thought is an original creation. Superimposed upon that is a contextualization that we call reason or logic. The Buddha said, the space in which the void, by that he meant the infinite presence of the self, can be recognized is between thoughts. No, it's right prior to thoughts. We've discussed it endlessly, Buddha and I. I said, he agreed. He said, it's not between thoughts, it's just prior thoughts. No, it's the translation from various languages and all. Besides, you weren't there to hear the Buddha lecture. Besides, what he's trying to convey is there's only one truth to convey. There isn't any two truths, you see. It isn't that the space is between the thoughts or between prior to the thoughts, but in both, of course, conditions. So if you watch as your mind just starts to think, you'll see that just before the instant that thought started, there was nothing there. Every thought comes out of nothing. You discover that you're close to being home. You begin to identify with the silent nothingness out of which each thought arises. That which is closest to your reality is the silent field out of which the song of the bird arises. The silent mind is present within you at all times. It's present right this instant. You're only listening with a little bitty part of your mind. The majority of your mind is silent. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
One identifies progressively then with the field, the context. That which you are is the context. At a more advanced level, you see that the context all includes. Context includes content as well, but at this point, forget about content. You're the context out of which it all arises, out of the energy of life. So you become devoted to the discernment of this quality of silence within by the letting go of everything that stands in its way. The mind becomes progressively silent. And then there comes a moment where the only thing left is you. The only thing left to be surrendered is the sense of self, which you've always identified as self, and you realize that you have to surrender that also. At the final doorway to enlightenment, then, stands death. Death as you understand it. Death as you have experienced it. Death as it is believed in, because if that which you think you are is life itself, to surrender that to God means to die. And at that point, the training you had as a warrior in many a lifetime, the willingness to die for a greater cause, now comes forth. To have been able to commit Hare Kari, the willingness to die for one's belief. And then comes the great terror of death, because all the times you've died in previous lifetimes was a joke. Whammo, you're out of body and life is better than it was before, I'll tell you. So you've never experienced death. Nobody has experienced death. This is the one and only time you can actually die. There's the knowingness that what you are facing is absolute death. And then arises the terror of nothingness. If that which I believe in, I'm committed to as myself, if I surrender that, I will become nothing. There is the fear of death and the fear of the void. You know? At that point, those who have been through there, the energy of those who have been through that point will come to you, and you will remember. Walk straight ahead no matter what, no matter how severe the fear. The greatest fear of all, walk through it. And so the terror lasts for an ungodly minute. And one has made it through. So the great beings that have walked through there, and when you're there, you'll see who was there. You know who was there and who turned back. The majority turned back. 85% turned back. Therefore, I want to make the instruction clear. In thy name, O Lord, at the moment of death, die for God and walk through the fear. And then stands the glory unfolding, a radiance so magnificent, so beyond all comprehension, beyond that which is humanly knowable. Because at that point, you stop being human. You walk beyond humanness itself in the presence of divinity. There is one basic saying in Zen that one can rely on completely. And that is to walk through all fear no matter what. Walk through all fear, committed to spiritual truth no matter what. First of all, make sure that's spiritual truth. Secondly, make sure that you know this from the knowingness of that which has accomplished it. It better be a teacher who has been there. Know it with a concrete faith. That within you, which is dedicated to reaching God, is what's brought you to the point of death. And at that time, then, one says, for thee, O Lord God, do I lay down my life. So, those words will be with you. Amen. Thank you. And therefore, I have fulfilled my role as a teacher. I've told you the whole story. Thank you. We'll break for lunch. We'll be back in an hour. Nothing is causing anything else. Nothing is causing anything. All comes into existence by divine ordination. Each thing expresses the fulfillment of its essence. In the unfolding, everything is at its state of perfection at this moment. This is a perfect flower unfolding. It is still a perfect flower unfolding perfectly, still unfolding perfectly. So you see the perfection of all of creation. When you see the perfection of all of creation, you see that the criminal is being the perfect criminal as he goes bang. He is the perfect criminal, is he not? You can bemoan it and say, oh, but shouldn't this world be peaceful without criminals? But then what would you do without criminals? You'd have to create a whole other world in which there's lots of criminals and horrible people and stuff, wouldn't you? If the purpose of the world is an infinite choices, if it's sort of a purgatorial paradise, if you destroy the quality of the world of it is, you'd have to go create a whole other one. Where can you walk into a hail of bullets unless there's a war, right? How could you learn to forgive if there were nothing to forgive, right? Of course, as the Course of Miracles points out, once you see it correctly, there is nothing to forgive, and that dissolves the whole issue. Nobody's going to eat those flower petals? I'll eat them. Okay. The personality I grew up with was ascetic. Ascetic. Introvert. Introvert, ascetic, ectomorph. Ectomorphs are thin and nervous, don't eat much. And they shut off the lights all the time, save electric. People visit you and say, look, I brought you lunch. You say, I don't need lunch. I've got a banana in the refrigerator. That's enough till tomorrow, isn't it? I wanted to complete what we were talking about this morning. That you know all that needs to be known for the whole way. Because you may consider yourself even a beginner and find yourself suddenly and unexpectedly at the final door. It can happen just like that. And it can happen from the pits of hell. You went to a couple lectures, somebody told you where to meditate, next thing you know, whoosh, there you are. It's never too soon to be prepared because the doorway opens, and if you fail it, the consequence is rather severe. It may take many a lifetime to recover. One was presented with the opportunity of being at one with God and once said no to it. It's crushing, crushing. Therefore, to know what you need to know, people say, why tell us this early in the game? It's not early in the game. It's not early in the game for anybody here. Nobody who's early in the game would even be here. would scare the pants off of them. That's why I open all my books with a dedication, Gloria in Excelsis Deo. If you can get past that page, then the book's for you. That's sort of a qualifier. Gloria in Excelsis Deo. My God, man, what is this guy? Some kind of a weirdo. Take this book away, Genevieve. No, only so I already have a guard at the beginning of the book, you see? And also a caveat. Those who are spiritually timid or committed to some rigid religion might be well upset by the contents of what follows, and it would be advisable for them not to read it. Although many of the things could be considered conflictual, I think we've contextualized them in such a way that they are not conflictual. You understand? And we're just discovering that there's multiple heavens. So all you have to do is change the word exclusive and you're okay with everybody. All right, so there comes a time when one is confronted with the knowingness, it's all nonverbal. The higher demands are all nonverbal. There's nobody there, there's no words, there's no concepts. But there is a knowingness, and up comes the knowingness that the last and final step is facing you, and the requirement is to die. That is the requirement. Unless the fear of absolute death arises, that isn't the final door, because you still have hope left. Yeah. But when that is eliminated, then there's no way out, and one is confronted with the absoluteness. The things that that are operative at that point would be the energy field of the teacher in whom you have great faith. It tells you how to walk through that because that teacher has walked through it. Therefore, the conviction of the truth of the inner experience is very firm, rock-like. And you feel its rock-likeness. It was rock-like. That knowingness still, because few go through. Everyone who's going through leaves that conviction there. There's that rock-like knowingness to walk through all fear, no matter what. But the fear is quite intense because it is death. It is death. And something else is needed. Within yourself already exists that which is willing to lay down its life for God. That's not something you acquire, something you have to develop. It's something you locate within yourself. Because that question will come up over and over again in the spiritual pathway. Am I willing to surrender this to God? Am I willing to surrender that to God? And you will then locate within yourself that there is a capacity to lay anything down for God. If Krishna, Buddha, Jesus stood here and said, "Would you lay down your life for me?" You would say, "Yes, O Lord." So you find within yourself that which would say, "Yes, O Lord," to that request. If you do that, you will finesse that knowingness from yourself because it is already within the self. It's wise to come to know that within yourself. to know that it's there, and then you can call upon it. Because now, at the final door, you have the profound strength and conviction. That is strength. The strength of the truth of God, affirmed by those who have walked through it. That's the pathway of non-duality. But then, combined with it is the power of devotion. So the heart and the mind are one at that point. The devotion, that within you which is willing to lay down its life for God. Locate that within yourself now, when you don't need it, because the final moment arises unannounced. Unannounced. No way of knowing. In fact, quite unexpected. You're driving down the highway. Suddenly you see the car coming at you. There's a loud screaming metal. You feel an agonizing pain in your neck as your neck breaks. There's the moment right there. It just opened itself. Unexpected, unprepared for. Nobody said, meditate for the next 3 hours, it's going to arrive at noon. You're on your way to pick up the kids from school. Unexpected suddenness. You hear of a new meditative technique. You thought, that sounds kinky, I think I'll try it. Anchabuja, 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 and all of a sudden it opens up. It's just... So there's no warning. That's why I tell you now, early in the game. It's not early. It's late in the game. Belated. I should have told you the first lecture, but I thought I might skip. I would have scared everybody out, yeah. I better save that for number 12, you know what I mean? Yet you're going to have to die in the end. Oh, no, I signed up for that course. That's what the feeling is. Because the ego is stronger, it defies everything. The ego is just unbelievable. The tricks and it's learned this over, you know, huge expanses, speaking from a temporal perceptual viewpoint. It's learned it over huge expanses of time, how to survive. And now it faces extinction. In this particular consciousness, and it struggles for survival. Without me, you will die. That's what it's going to tell you. Without me, I am your life. I am the source of your life. I'm the core of your existence. Surrender me, and you're dead. And there's where you need the conviction. You reach within yourself. For thee, O Lord, do I lay down my life itself. And then you summon forth the very core of devotion, because there is within you already that which loves God more than the personal self. It already exists. And you summon it forth. So the power of devotion is the pathway. The pathway of devotion, the pathway of non-duality, and the pathway of service to others, as you saw all these people come up. That it is their joy to serve you, just as it is my joy to serve you. It brings me an ecstatic state, which I can't allow to develop, or this talk will end. I try to stay away from the devotional, because it brings all of it to a close. All right, we wanted to answer some questions now today. And I do want to thank all the people who work round the clock 7 days a week who call you, or you can call them at any time, who will drop everything and do anything for you. And they may seem like trivial things, but when you're in need of an espresso, you need an espresso. May seem incredible. And it takes a lot of doing this to be able to do it. So the espresso helps a lot, you know. Various things that connect you back with the physicality of work, of being in the world and all that. There's some very funny questions here. I don't understand that one. I don't understand that one either. All right. So, somebody asked about the Course in Miracles. You know, there's a number of pathways, all of them terrific. The 12 steps are perfect. In fact, to reach enlightenment, all you need is step 3 and step 11 in the 12-step course. Third step is willingness to surrender your life to God. And the 11th step is sought through prayer and meditation to ask God's will for me. Those two is all you need the whole way. Those two will suffice. There's only about the Course in Miracles, which had a calibrated around 600. It comes from, I think, what would be called the celestial realms. Probably about the same level as the White Brotherhood. And so the higher celestial realms have contact with humans via special arrangements, usually a karmic commitment and agreement. The only thing that I object to in the Course in Miracles is the one lesson, trust your brother. That has to be taken with a proviso. You heard what I said this morning. Trust your brother. I think it's true in the celestial realm. I don't think it's too trustable in this realm. That one has to be modified for this world. Yes, that's the only error in it. You know, of course, the miracle doesn't calibrate 1,000, it calibrates 600. So, you know, it's not all that can be said about everything. Yes, because the downside of the lovingness is that not being able or willing, or the two together, to see that the tiger, if provoked, can still kill you, you know. And to still love the person despite that. So I'd say, trust your brother and keep an eye on him. On a certain level, however, it is true that people will rise to be that which you see them as. People will rise to the expectation. So, on a certain level, it is true. And on the highest level, of course, it's true because it doesn't make any sense. There's no me to trust and no you to trust, because that is viewing separation as a reality. There is no me that trusts you, because there is only the one self. So the Course is, that's the only quiggly part I would say about the Course. I have to stand up all this time. I'm going to fall down here in a minute. That's because I have to read. I can't do two things at once. Stand up and read. I can sit down and read, or I can stand up, but to stand up and read is difficult. Oh my goodness. All right, I better start talking fast. Oh. All that I teach is experiential. Nothing that I teach is from elsewhere other than that which I quote as being from elsewhere. Yeah. I have permission to ask this question, resist. The answer is yes, resist. Thank you. So, the conviction then, the power, the vibration of a teacher who has experienced it the whole way is that it is the absolute subjectivity of self-realization. See, self-realization, which is another term one might use, is radically subjective. It is radical subjectivity. The realization of the truth of the mystic, the truth of God immanent rather than transcendent. The mystic is the one who experiences the reality of divinity as the core and the essence of life, the core and essence of one's existence, one's creation, and the reality of that which you are. It reveals itself. And that brings about the absoluteness of the certainty, which is the source of the vibrational frequency. The so-called grace of the guru is nothing but the vibrational frequency of the absolute certainty, because it is that absolute certainty that is needed at the great and final moment. The guru that you picture at that point had better not calibrate 180, I'll tell you. Truth goes for a big price, boy. You ain't going to give it away. Now, I think we've already explained, actually, with all these questions here, we've already explained them all, only you don't realize that we've explained them all. Now, we really need this calibrated scale of consciousness again to answer some of these questions. As we said, the numeric scale is not a better than scale. It's each level is perfect for its assignment. The scale below it would be deficient. The scale above it would not even make it attractive or interesting. So it has to be something. To do your excellent best is to be at that which you are calibrated for. Now, the movement of the level through the levels of calibrations has to do with spiritual realization and work and the evolution of consciousness, as it is potentiated by your own commitment. The spiritual pathway is really a way of contextualizing your life. It's not a matter of where anyone is on a scale. Besides, as I've told you, the doorway can open at any time. You think, well, I got to go through all this here. I ain't even in bliss yet. How can I get enlightened? Because you can go from here all the way to there, 1/10 of a second. It was 1/10 of a second. It was an eternity of agony. Eons. The lower depths of hell are like the higher levels, beyond all time. Alwaysness, the alwaysness, the unendingness. The agony is forever. And there is no hope. And all last vestiges of hope are removed. And now you know you're in for the real agony. after an eon or so, suddenly, the door opens. Just don't think just because you're in hell that it can't happen. Moments of hell, moments of agony, moments of doubt, moments of anger. The doorway can open at any time. All the spiritual work that you do then prepares for the final pathway. Happily, usually, it is more gradual. A person becomes more and more loving, more and more forgiving. Usually it's rather gradual. And those states also, as I pointed out, have their vulnerability. In the 500s, one's vulnerability is one's naivete. You can be blissed out in a very high state and then also get hit by that which is non-integrous in an unprepared area and crash down again. And now it's horrible because you've been in a higher state. All right, so nevertheless, the karmic merit that you have earned through commitment and devotion to spiritual inner work, etc., comes to your rescue, happily. The way through then is straight. To face whatever is coming up, surrender it to God. Surrender up your reservations about it. Whatever is required, the way is straight through. And as you get to each level is capped by a consideration. Each level feels good as you emerge into it. But then as you float up through that level, the reason that 500 is not 600 is because between 500 and 600, there's dualities holding you into that position. So on the one hand, it feels incredible to move from here to here. Each move up is incredible, but each level itself then represents a limitation of that which is beyond it. So I think a great guru at 1,000 is marvelous to the viewpoint of a populace where 85% is below even integrity, as compared to the possibilities of the spiritual universe, it's probably kindergarten. You understand? Whatever my awareness might be, I'm sure it's of a kindergarten level to higher energies, you know. Let me say an archangel is 50,000 and over. What could we possibly be, even if in the view of other people who are not as evolved, the college education seems, you know, pretty impressive. But to a postdoctoral researcher, a doctorate is just, you know, jacks for openers. So, everything therefore is relative, is significant, depends on how you contextualize it. We all are grateful and thankful that we are on a spiritual pathway. That is the most difficult task of all. That people think in terms of calibration. Now, the calibration, these are just the automatic consequences. If you head due east and keep your compass in this direction, sooner or later you're going to pass this island and that island, and eventually you're going to get your goal. The hardest thing about all of spirituality is to get your compass set on a spiritual goal. 85% of the population sneers at it, right? It's just ridiculous, it's absurd, and etc. To even be on the spiritual pathway is already the greatest karma there is. That is the greatest gift. The rest is automatic, because once you get bit by the bug, you don't have much choice about it. Once you get bit by the spiritual bug, the way home is certain. You know, you may get lost here and there for a few lifetimes or wandering around, but that's irrelevant because the pathway is going to pull you. So we said you're not propelled by your past, you're attracted by your future. And you set your future by your choice and design and by your spiritual agreement. So what happens then, and of course in quantum mechanics, you know, there's no past, present, or future. There is no such a thing as a sequence of past, present, and future in the infinite quantum potentiality. The future precedes the present. You understand what I'm saying? Because you've already chosen the future and activated it in the now, the future is what's activating you now. You understand? Okay. So everyone here is being pulled by the infinite potentiality which you have already chosen and committed to, or you wouldn't be here. You'd be at the ball game. So everyone should relax that the way is certain. Enlightenment is certain for everybody here, or you wouldn't be here. Huh? The future, then, is what is activating you in the present. Huh? That make sense now?
Yeah.
Because of what you've already chosen. You've already chosen that out of the quantum potentiality. You have an infinite number of choices, but you've chosen that. That is now what is attracting you, like a magnet to the future, dragging you through all that you have to go through, giving up chocolate and everything. I gave up chocolate for God. That's how I got this halo. I remember when I gave up chocolate for God. Totally let it go. By God, it was gone. I was free as a bird. I never thought of chocolate. I didn't want chocolate. The heck with chocolate. I had a whole bunch of people out from the Course in Miracles to a place that I was staying at the time, in a big place. And guess what they brought? Big sheet cakes of chocolate cake. Chocolate, I had chocolate everywhere. When I didn't want chocolate, didn't need chocolate, couldn't care less about chocolate. And I've lived in a chocolate world ever since. So. I don't need or want chocolate. On the sideboard at home, there's three or four different kinds of chocolate. And guess what Ms. Lovely made for me this weekend? Chocolate fudge. So, what you let go of comes into you, and that's the trouble with abundance, you see? That's the trouble with abundance, is when you don't want anything anymore, it just pours in from all over.